Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Round Table.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Round Table, coming to you from Beijing. I'm He Young. Good to have you join us. Not like this is any of my business, but how did you sleep last night? The latest sleep report found that Chinese people don't get enough sleep. On average, we're sleeping less than 7 hours. Additionally, it seems like Gen Z is having difficulty falling sound asleep. What's keeping you up at night? Do you think technology could offer solutions to help us drift off into slumberland? And what is the new TikTok social media trend? Hashtag the 75 hard challenge. And is it actually good for you? For today's program, I'm joined by Yu Shun in the studio and Josh Cotterell on the line. First on today's show, World Sleep Day, observed annually on March 21st in China, serves as a reminder of the pivotal role healthy sleep plays in our lives. As our society races forward with the rapid pace of modern life and the mounting pressures of work, family, and a lot of other things, a rising number of individuals find themselves grappling with sleep-related difficulties. Recently, this trend appears more pronounced among younger generations, such as Generation Z, those people born between 1997 to 2012, who struggle more than ever to attain restful slumber. In light of all these challenges, there arises a pressing need to address and cater to the needs of these folks affected by sleep disturbances. This necessity has paved the way for growing opportunities within the expanding sleep economy. So, let's go to you first, Yu Shun. How is the overall sleep of Chinese people?
So we can see, according to the ChinaNews.com, a 2024 survey report on the sleep status of Chinese individuals published by Chinese Sleep Research Society pointed out that on average, residents go to sleep after midnight, and the duration of nighttime sleep is generally short. The incidence of sleep disorders in China has been increasing and showing a trend towards younger populations. Only 29% of the surveyed population go to sleep before 11 p.m., and 47% go to sleep after midnight, and 13% go to sleep after 2 a.m. in the morning. And among them, the average bedtime for individuals born after 2000 is around 12:30, while for those born before the 1970s, it is 11 p.m., which means the younger generation tends to stay up late. And a later sleep may cause a lot of issues. 59% of people experiencing symptoms of insomnia, while only 19% of the population have no sleep disorders at all. 28% of the population sleeps for less than 6 hours at night, and 64% of people have poor sleep quality. We can see a lot of people are experiencing sleep disturbances, with the main ones being waking up in night or early in the morning, difficulty falling asleep, and nocturia. And the two most common types of sleep disorders in China are insomnia and sleep breathing disorders.
Sleep breathing disorders. Does that mean snoring then?
I assume that is.
Okay, I shouldn't be laughing, because this is a serious matter for some people. Josh, what are your initial thoughts after listening to such a comprehensive introduction by Yu Shun, and what is the sleeping situation that you found out in your country as well as the U.S. as such?
Well, I think we see a lot of similar problems in the U.S., the U.K., and Europe as well. I think that the importance of sleep is widely recognized, but younger generations, they are starting to face new challenges, especially things like screen time. We know that the use of electronic devices can really interfere and disrupt the body's sleep. And we know that younger generations tend to have longer screen time. Stress and anxiety as well. I think that often we associate that with maybe older persons, right, who are at work and things like this. But actually, it's seeming that younger generations are experiencing quite high levels of stress and anxiety due to things like, again, social media, which then is coupled with screen time and things like this. And of course, academic expectations and such are going to affect sleep. In the US, there are some quite shocking statistics, really, that I found, especially for younger generations. According to the National Sleep Foundation, only 15% of teenagers reported getting 8 hours of sleep before, you know, school nights or university or whatever, with the recommended amount being 8 to 10 hours for that age group. There was also a study published in Journal of Pediatricians that found that approximately 73% of high school students in the US did not get enough sleep. In the United Kingdom, in my home country, it's also pretty bad. The Sleep Council reported that 40% of British teenagers are sleep deprived, getting less than 7 hours of sleep per night. So I guess this is the sort of gauge that is used in the UK and US. If it's sort of less than 7 hours, then it's considered to be sleep deprived. And there was also another survey conducted by the Sleep Charity that found that 45% of teenagers in the UK experience sleep problems at least a few nights a week.
Well, that's a similar gauge that we use here in China as well. 7 hours for adults, I suppose. Mm. And did both of you mention that people are just going to bed really late or later than midnight? And that's definitely considered as kind of a bad thing. Is it because the assumption is we all need to wake up, you know, at a certain amount of time to go to school or go to work or whatnot, and therefore that just shortens the amount of sleep one can get pretty much on a regular basis? So what do you see as the maybe most sleep deprived demographics, or what are the most salient issues that are affecting people's sleep?
We can see that according to the Chinese Medical Doctor Association, in recent years, among people aged 60 and above, the incidence of sleep disorders is 36%, while among adolescents, it is 26%. Among them, there is a significant gender difference in the incidence of insomnia, with females over the age of 13 being noticeably higher than males. And also, we can see, I think, different social status also affect the time of sleep. So among the working population, sleep during non-working nights tends to be more sufficient, with an average of 33 minutes more sleep than on workdays. And bedtime and wake-up times are also typically later on non-working nights compared to workdays. And additionally, college students tend to have later bedtime and wake-up times on non-working days compared to the working population. I think I can understand this part because as one of the working populations, I tend to have that kind of body clock that even though I want to sleep and wake up later at weekends, my body just wake me up naturally at the certain time and I just cannot fall asleep again.
You can't?
No.
I thought that's like the most beautiful treat of the weekend or on holidays. That is, sure, your body wakes you up or, you know, automatically you're like, I'm on at like, for me, it's like 7 in the morning. That's when I usually need to get up and get ready for work. And then on weekends, it's like, all right, I'll go to the bathroom and then just come back to bed and recuperate. And usually that is, you know, having that extra nap is just fantastic. And next time when you wake up, it's like 9 a.m. and I feel so like energetic and refreshed. And I've spoken to this to Niu Honglin and she's like, huh, you know, cherish that as a single lady before, you know, you become a mom, you know, because then your body clock will be controlled by your baby's crying. So, Josh, what do you think about, I guess, this routine, or is it a kind of circadian rhythm that our bodies have accustomed to? And also, you know, just these sleep issues or the reasons of which that people are suffering from?
Yeah, well, I think that I'm similar to Yusheng, actually, and I struggle a lot if I wake up early in the morning. So my circadian rhythm is, I don't know if it's off or if it's just really strong or something, but I think it's probably more to do with stress from work. But and I think that stress management, those who manage to, you know, manage their stress and compartmentalize their life and basically just have order, is going to help with sleep, because sleep is all about, you know, maintaining a consistent schedule, right? And if you disrupt that in any way, shape or form, then you can really throw your circadian rhythm off. I think that in England, we call it like sleep hygiene. We actually use this word hygiene sometimes, which I think is a bit of a strange word. Yeah. But
keep your bedroom clean. Like, no, it's
well,
not
it sounds
that.
Like that, right? But no, it's, I guess it's more because, you know, I think it's easy to forget that sleep after like food and water is probably the most important thing, you know, for you to survive, right? Without it, you will not live. And we forget this. And so when we talk about hygiene, it's basically sort of maintaining a healthy body. I think that's why we sometimes use this word, right? And we just forget this, I think sometimes, right? About how important it is for health, like overall health.
And also I think that is why a lot of theories are advocating sleeping earlier, because maybe we have the idea of, okay, at weekends, we can have that kind of makeup sleep, even if I stayed up late during the work days. But the thing is that there are some theories about if you get enough time of sleep, it is okay, no matter when do you go to sleep. But I still think that's different. You know, sleeping earlier and get enough sleep can actually have a different status during the daytime. And at least for me, I can feel more energetic if I just sleep earlier.
How early are we talking about?
Like at least before 11.
Okay.
Not at midnight.
All right. So
you consider that to be early?
11 p.m. Yes, according to Yushun.
I think
Josh,
that
you
is,
look shocked.
That is the, you know, acceptable early time for a lot of young generations.
I wouldn't use the word early. I would say that's sort of late. The latest healthy time to go to sleep would be 11, depending on when you wake up, I guess. I mean, but I think you wake up kind of early, Yushun.
Well, he lives. Okay, this is just divulging too much information on national radio. But Yushun lives relatively close to work, so he can sleep in a little bit, like maybe get half an hour more sleep, maybe. than myself, because I need
lucky man.
Oh yes, I think that no wonder these days Chinese people say that living nearby work is like a super ultra luxury to have, because a lot of us need to commute for almost an hour, and that means you'll have less time to sleep, or you should just go to bed earlier. But it's a complicated thing to, you know, it's just really difficult to carve out your like me time, and if you want to give up that to sleep, and it's a constant struggle, and that's why we can't settle on it, and therefore we kind of just procrastinate and push our bedtime further back and more, and that's really annoying. And we need to talk about health, and essentially I think that's what we're trying to figure out today. And in recent years, there seems to be growing interest in lamenting and vowing to fix sleep problems. And certainly a lot of money is flowing towards the so-called sleep economy. But what exactly counts as sleep economy?
So the term sleep economy basically refers to the market and industry surrounding products and services aimed at improving sleep quality and addressing sleep-related issues. So both the products and services in the sleeping economy encompass a wide range of categories. So we can see some of the hardware products related to sleep. So obviously mattresses and bedding, sleep trackers and wearables like our smart devices, and also sleep aids, something like white noise machines, aromatherapy diffusers, and weighted blankets cannot be included as sleep aids. And also sleep supplements. I think the normal one is melatonin. A lot of people take that when they're having problems of sleep. And also lighting solutions is also one of the products related to sleep. Also, there are softwares that is related to sleep or in sleep economy. Mobile applications and software programs offering guided meditation, relaxation exercises, sleep tracking, or cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. That's what we call CBTI. And recently, actually, there is a trend or a kind of a new thing that is online.
Yes.
That is called a sleep coach or Hong Shui Shi. A lot of people buy this kind of service online or on e-commerce platforms. Basically, they make phone calls with you.
What?
And
that's going to keep you up.
they try to use this kind of voice call to actually lead you to sleep. Maybe some people need that person to actually do a simultaneous live coach for you, not like these, what we mentioned before, the guided meditation thing. So that is kind of new, and the price typically range around 10 yuan, that's about $1.5 US per 15 minutes. And the content includes various options such as psychological counseling, goodnight lullabies, mm-hmm. and tree holes for your confession. Maybe you can fast anything that you want to this, what we say, coach, and consumers can even specify the gender of the sleep coach they prefer.
Yeah, of course. I don't think I want to be confessing to some random guy and my aim is to fall asleep. And don't you feel that you might fall down the rabbit hole of the more you confess, the more awake you are? And that's just counterintuitive and counterproductive to, you know, the purpose here. That is, I'm trying to fall asleep. So Josh, you know, after listening to all these different options, what things do you think might work, might not work, and will definitely work?
I actually think that the option that you just described sounds quite good, and I can understand why it might help a lot of people, because I guess that if you're a worrier, which a lot of people are, I am one of those people. As soon as I lay down to try and go to sleep, I have to go, my brain just has to go through every single little problem. And if there's no problem, I will find one. I will find one to think about and worry about. So I can understand that having somebody to, you know, being able to articulate that out loud, it really can be quite relaxing. I mean, it's the same with sort of like cognitive behavioral therapy techniques as well, about, you know, sort of identifying things, saying them out loud or noting them, they call it, noting your issues. So I guess that can help for some people, but there's a lot of things that can help everybody, I think, right? And again, we all know this, but limiting screen time. I mean, setting boundaries with your phone, setting some boundaries with yourself and your phone is so important, I think.
Yeah.
Because that can also, as well as the blue light, right? It can also be a source of anxiety and stress, right?
Absolutely.
Work emails, work messages, you know, I'm sure we've all been guilty of not being able to sleep very well or picking up the phone, you know, just as you're about to relax to go to sleep, and then that WeChat message pops up and, you know, suddenly
turn
your
off
whole
the
night is ruined, right? Or something like this.
So, yeah.
I mean, I try to, but
yeah, I've actually experimented a little bit for more than a month, and I think it's helped me to go to sleep better. That is, I purposefully prohibit myself not to look at the phone 1 hour before going to bed. I've actually considered putting my smartphone in a different room altogether, but I need to rely on the alarm clock to get up in the morning.
Right.
Yeah. So therefore, I was like, all right, I'm just going to put this like far away from my bed, because I used to have this habit to look at the videos before going to bed and maybe have a quick browse through the WeChat friend moments. And that is just a terrible idea. And don't look at videos before going to bed, because it even, you know, excites your brain more. I mean, these are some really simple tricks when you think about it, but it's helped a great deal. So I agree with you, Josh. I mean, our smartphones could be the culprit to stopping us from falling asleep quickly and having high quality sleep. I also like to ask you guys this. Technology and sleep might seem like conflicting ideas for some people, and we're often told that less screen time and less artificial light will help us sleep better. But a lot of the products that you mentioned just now, Yushun, they're highly tech oriented. So what do you say to that?
Recent years, there are some controversies surrounding these sleep aid gadgets or products. For example, smart sleep aid devices, although their working principles are basically the same, but they have different prices, and most of the functions tend to be the same. So some consumers believe that there is no significant therapeutic effect by using these things. And some industry insiders also say that the psychological effect of these high-tech products is greater than their actual therapeutic effect.
Yeah.
That is, I think, making sense, because when you're sleeping, the thing can actually make you sleep is you feel safe and feel peaceful, and then you can fall asleep,
mm-hmm.
I think. So at that moment, my trick is to exercise more so that you will run out of your energy and you feel tired and it's easier for you to fall asleep. And when you are feeling peaceful at that moment, I think all of these tricks and technology things are actually the helper, or they're actually assisting you or trying to make you feel peaceful to fall asleep.
Yeah, see, the exercise thing, it works for you, but it doesn't work for some other people. I've shared on the show before, like the exercising, for example, just makes me really excited, my body excited, and I find it difficult to fall asleep immediately after. So if I want to try that, I accept your theory of basically wearing yourself out, and then you'll be so tired and you want to go to bed. So maybe just schedule the workout during the day or something like that. And I did a quick sweep on the internet and I found that at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas in January this year, there was some really interesting stuff being showed off of various kinds of sleep tech, and everything from a wearable sleep mask with LED lights designed to help you shift your sleep schedule to a smart bed with heavy sensors in the frame to tracking things like your heart rate. And if you start snoring, apparently, it will detect it and elevate your head. But I think a lot of them are still stuck at the stage of collecting your data and tracking your data, but it falls short in actually improving your sleep. And there aren't many products on the market that has proven with evidence that it can improve your sleep quality. So I think that is the part which is a major shortcoming of this whole sleep economy. But the problem is, or I guess this is kind of in the heart of the business, is that there is a need. And these are the enterprises who are coming up with supposedly solutions to make people feel a little bit better. Because once, I mean, you have spent the money, it's almost like you've paid the sunk cost. And the more you pay, the more you either feel that you're inclined to believe that it has an effect, or maybe you've got some folks out there who feel kind of guilty. And like, yeah, it's a little bit of a twisted relationship. So, Josh, what are your thoughts on whether this sleep economy makes much sense or not?
Well, I think that it does make sense, given how important sleep is for us. There's always going to be a market for sleep. And there always has been a market, a big sleep economy, even before technology, right? There's been investment into everything from the simple pillow to the mattress, right? To music that can help you sleep, to all kinds of things, right? But now when we do have this interesting time where it's getting integrated into technology, and I think that there is a potential to have a healthy relationship with some of these applications, with the technology when it comes to sleeping. But I do think that maybe there needs to be some restrictions, and there needs to be further studies into how helpful some of these applications are for you in the long term. Again, thinking about things like becoming reliant on them to sleep, right? Is that a healthy thing? Maybe it is okay, right? If you sleep well with this application and you're getting your 8 hours, if that's how much you need every night, and it's because maybe this application gives you some sort of wind down or audio help and you use that for the rest of time, maybe that's okay, you know?
Maybe that is okay.
Yeah.
And sleep has gone through a bit of a renaissance in the last 5 or 10 years. It used to be almost like a bragging point to say, and often from CEOs, I only need 4 hours of sleep. Where now it's much more common to hear people realizing the importance of sleep and their overall health, mindfulness, and energy levels, stress levels. And there's more and more recognition that sleep is vital for physical and mental health and for productivity and performance at work too. If you're struggling to fall asleep or stay asleep, my first proposition is turn inwards. Focus on your own behaviors first, because it's likely to have the largest impact on sleep quality. it's not really a problem you can buy your way out of, though it's not likely to stop sleep-deprived people from trying.